Over the last 2 years post-COVID, there's been no shortage of meetings.
No.
Along with meetings comes a lot of people saying things that people just agree to without really much thought. So I've got a couple of business analogies here.
Okay.
You can't run a marathon on an empty stomach.
I get that.
There's no harvest without water.
So I logically understand what that means, yeah.
Maybe not as obvious as the next one. A leaking boat is a sinking boat. And then finally, you can't bake a cake without all the ingredients.
That's true. Well, I guess you could. It just wouldn't be a good cake.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to Touchpoint. Welcome to episode number 272. I'm Reed Smith. That's Chris Boyer.
You can't do a Touchpoint podcast without two hosts.
Welcome, one and all. Thanks for joining us for yet another episode of Touchpoint. Appreciate you coming back for another show. If you're a repeat listener, if this is your first time, welcome. We certainly appreciate you tuning in. Would love to hear from you. So as you listen to the show, feel free to reach out to Chris or myself. We're easy enough to find. It's just our names over on LinkedIn or Twitter. Mm-hmm. We'd love to hear what you think, pros, cons, other topics we should cover, people we should interview, all that kind of fun stuff. But certainly appreciate you spending your time with us. A couple things to point out, touchpoint.health is the website. Next time you're in front of a computer, if you're not right now, you can navigate over there, again, touchpoint.health, and you will see all of our past episodes, our book of business, if you will, our catalog. And feel free to dig around. Maybe you can find other shows you like, other topics, things like that. You'll also notice something called the TPS report up in the top navigation of the site. If you give us your name and your email address, we will give you exactly one email per week with a few articles to get your week started. So it comes out each Monday morning. We're nearing in on doing that 200 times, FYI. Mm-hmm. So we've sent out a bunch of these emails with a bunch of links to articles that might be of interest to you. So again, that's all we plan to do with it. We're not going to try to sell you anything. We don't have any merch or anything like that. So,
not yet.
Not yet. If you want merch, I don't know, let us know, I guess. But again, touchpoint.health is the website. We'll pause here for one quick second while you go check that out and be back with today's show. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. Today, Reed, we're going to come back to a favorite topic of ours, one that we've addressed, I'd say, at least a dozen times before in the history of our show, which is the state of CRM, or customer relationship management.
Yes, yes, yes. We have talked about this a number of times. It's been a little bit. I mean, we talk and kind of touch on topics. You know, it's hard to do an episode and not kind of walk across a number of different topics. Is that an analogy? Walking? No. I think that may be a metaphor that we're walking across. I don't know. I'm not good at this kind of stuff. But anyway, CRM squarely as a topic of the show has been just a little bit. So again, fun to jump back into this topic. I think it's top of mind. And we'll get to hear from Justin Rodriguez a bit later in the show. But yeah, here we go.
Well, first of all, I think we continually come back to this topic because CRMs are often misunderstood or miscategorized. And lately, when you talk to digital marketing professionals, a lot of times the confusion now is coming around a CRM versus a CDP. We did a whole episode on CDPs.
We did. So CRM, everybody knows what that is, customer relationship management, CDP, consumer data platform.
And if you are confused by those two, I would encourage you to go back and give a listen to one of our previous episodes. It was actually episode 209, the MarTech Stack of the Future, all three-letter acronyms, where we talked about CRMs, DMPs, and CDPs, and just the differences between those. When we level set against where we are, the state of CRM in this day and age in 2022, there still is a lot of confusion, particularly around the role of CRM versus a CDP. So let's first start, Reed, with an article that we found from DMSWire.com. They did an article that was entitled, just recently published, called "Are CRM Solutions Keeping Pace with the Industry Needs?" It's a good question.
And so they talk in here a little bit about where CRMs fit in the age of consumer data platforms. And so again, philosophically and practically, as far as, you know, what is CRM, you know, as a program versus what is CRM as like a vendor solution, or two different things. So just kind of keep that in mind as we go through this, as it relates to technology versus, you know, kind of programs or programmatic aspects.
What is the vision of what CRM actually could be for an organization?
Yeah, they talk in here that CRM was initially thought to, you know, unite people, the process, and the technology that really hones in on the management of a consumer, you know, of the relationship you have as a brand or an organization or an entity with your customer. The idea of CRM, they say in theory, connects the three core customer-facing functions, so sales, marketing, and service.
They go on to say that CRMs can also collect and interpret customer pipeline revenue data and get insights into engagement. And in fact, a person named Jay Kulkarni, who's the CEO and founder of a digital solution provider called Theorem, he dubs it the central hub to enable customer experience solutions in modern organizations. It's natural to assume that CRMs are now de facto the most centralized place in an organization to collect consumer data.
You know, this was and has been up to this point kind of the de facto place where you would access anything related to the consumer, you know, i.e. the data that tells you about the consumer. But they're talking here about that, you know, many CRMs are doing double duty, maybe even triple duty, for things they weren't necessarily built for, such as campaign management, segmentation, and even, you know, as a marketing database.
Okay, so now I think about the CRMs that I've worked with, Reed. All of them I actually have used for campaign management, segmentation, and creating marketing databases. This is getting confusing for me.
I think that's all I've used them for, just about.
Right. So,
but this is where it kind of moves. It says the rapidly evolving CDP, or the consumer data platform, marketing automation, and cloud-based data management landscape offers CRMs a chance to return to their original purpose. So managing the customer relationship. So again, and I think Justin even mentions this later, but you know, when we first got into this, it was just about direct mail in a lot of cases. That's interesting, right? So now we're allowing this tool to go back to duties assigned, right?
Well, okay, but then let's talk about the CDP really quickly, because the consumer data platform is also an important tool that not many health systems I work with actually have. CDP started with the promise of creating sort of one unique, consistent customer record. The clarity here is about who's holding the master data and in governance. CDP early adopters realized that technology may not be ideal for all data management use cases. And so what they did is they actually focused CDPs on the marketing aspects of managing customer data. You know, CDPs are ideal for marketers who want to control customer experiences in a single user interface, this article says, but they may not be the necessary place to house and structure metadata like product, promotion, store, and loyalty information needed for that analytics. CRM is sort of that de facto place where we're storing that master data, where CDP becomes more of the consumer insights and marketing and campaign management activities, so to speak.
So they're talking here about the fact that CRM is kind of that centralized hub of kind of the business strategy and execution, whereas CDPs is the actual data management that only works, right, if there's an integration between the two of them.
And many of the CRMs that we work with in healthcare, they are kind of hybrid tools, both CRM and CDPs, at least the ones that I've been familiar with.
I would say that, I don't know, there is a difference. Kind of in our world, at least not right now. Like, I don't see people with both of these things, at least by name.
I still think CDPs are going to take more and more of a role in a modern MarTech stack, so to speak, in the future, particularly when we start to get into the elimination of third-party cookies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take a second here. This article goes on to focus in on what's next for CRM, given the fact that there's really two different platforms, CRMs and CDPs. Where does CRM go from here, Reed?
They call out a couple of things in here, a number of examples. First being increased automation and agility. So they talk about the fact that CRM should eliminate a lot of the task-based stuff, right, in favor of automation and workflows, especially in the administrative tasks, you know, accurate real-time distribution of leads, the orchestration of go-to-market processes. And besides being the system that connects every customer, CRMs will score if they're, you know, enable teams to focus on people-dependent tasks, like identifying qualified prospects, and then actually making a better process for outreach and engagement.
So I get that. Increased automation, agility. I think all of our tools are there. The other piece they stress here is increased integration. These platforms, CRM platforms, need to enable more of those streamlined customer experiences. They have to expand their set of native connectors, as they call them, to get greater visibility and automation across all the different MarTech platforms that are out there, both online and physical, by the way, channels. I think that your interview later with Justin kind of alludes to that too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you want to be able to enable those business users to be where the customers are, though, in those native channels. So integration is really ensuring that it's tracking all of this activity, but not within a centralized CRM interface. You don't do it from within the CRM. You may be managing and engaging with people on social media. Your CRM just tracks that through its centralized platform. And more integration also into core systems, right? Like marketing automation, websites, and other things like that are also very important to allow for us to get the value of what a CRM is.
Next on the list is increased intelligence. AI, machine learning, artificial intelligence, machine learning are not topics that are probably new. You know, we've mentioned them a lot. We've even had entire shows dedicated to these topics. But they're talking here about the fact that they're dominant themes when it comes to the next generation of CRM in the context of native AI capabilities that can help produce really tangible outcomes and things like that. And this, for example, they say improving sales effectiveness with predictive analytics that suggests the next best action at each stage of the buying journey. In this case, you know, helping a salesperson effectively by suggesting the right people to involve in order to increase the likelihood for success.
Another thing is increased interactivity. The way we could actually collect customer data is coming from multiple different places now. It's not just like digital channels. It could be voice, it could be text, and allowing for text and voice access options to be captured into the CRM and aligning that to the right customers. So let's say, for example, a chatbot, integrating your chatbot into your CRM so you can capture that. Conversely, on the other side, allowing for visual dashboards to empower users to share information and collaborate that are more real time in nature, right? So we're starting to get more and more interactivity within your CRM. Gone are those days where you sync up with your CRM every quarter, which when I first started in healthcare was what the norm. Every quarter we would sync CRM data. Now we're getting to almost near real time.
Finally, they call out something that certainly is next for CRM, but is this idea of added value adds, if you will. It's not probably uncommon or strange to think that teams are, you know, smaller, budgets becoming stricter or even smaller in some cases. And so people are looking to do more with less, right? So CRM, no exception here. They've got an example from HubSpot, which has a very popular CRM, especially in kind of the small business world. But they've recently launched a payment functionality based on some insight and feedback from clients that, you know, wanted payment data in the CRM to help aid in the buying process and eliminate any sort of a blind spot, you know, et cetera. So again, we're having some additional functionalities, you know, start to become aligned and become part of CRM.
Imagine having bill pay within your CRM. That could be the future Easy. State. Yeah, Easy. Exactly. The article ends with a really interesting quote from Courtney Trudeau, who is a technology strategy at Merkle. Courtney says, "The future of CRM is here. The market has set the expectations for automation, interoperability, and sophisticated AI capabilities. And now it's up to the platforms to deliver." It's kind of an interesting kind of call to arms here in 2022 to get our CRM strategies and our CRM solutions to kind of align with our business. So why don't we do this, Reid? Let's take a little break here. And then when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the state of CRM data, because I think that's also an important part of the overall story of CRM. But we'll do that after this brief pause. Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media. Okay, before the break, Reid, we were talking about just the state of CRM, CDPs, and like kind of where we're at. To paint really a clearer picture of CRMs, we also have to talk about CRM data or data. The stuff that powers our CRM to be more effective. And we found this report by Validity, which is a data validation company. So no wonder they do a yearly study on the state of CRM data health. In this study, they actually did a global survey of more than 1,200 CRM users and stakeholders across the United States, UK, and Australia. And they found that while CRM users have an unfounded confidence in the quality of their data, it also reveals crippling bottom line impacts of the disconnect between this confidence and the actual quality. So let's jump into some of their key findings, Reid.
Yeah, so first, the first big category, data quality has a direct impact on revenue. Again, data quality, direct impact, revenue. So most respondents, they say, reported having confidence in the overall quality of their data. Over 70% of respondents characterized their CRM data quality as either good or very good.
Okay.
That's good.
That's good.
They also say in here that 75% of respondents say duplicate and or inadequate outreach driven by poor data quality loses their company customers. So again, yeah, reaching out to the wrong people at the wrong time, I'm sure does cost you customers potentially. 50% say they lose new sales due to poor CRM data quality. 44% of respondents estimate their company loses over 10% in annual revenue due to poor quality. So wow. Again, the data quality direct correlation to revenue.
Well, that does make sense, but that number of 10% of potential annual revenue loss because the quality of your CRM data is bad, it gives me pause. It goes even further. It becomes even more concerning with the next key finding where they talk about how data mismanagement can lead to dubious internal
practices. Dubious. Yeah. Dubious.
Dubious. So get this. 75% of the people surveyed admitted that their staff often or sometimes fabricate data to tell the story they want decision makers to hear. We shouldn't laugh. That's pretty bad. But I've been in those situations too. We know data can tell a story depending on how you'd want to tell a story. I think it kind of speaks to the fact that sometimes CRM data doesn't align to what leadership wants from this data. Maybe there's different expectations. Here's some other interesting stats, Reid. Only 19% of respondents said CRM data quality is a high priority for leadership. That kind of confuses me. I know how much leadership cares about CRM, but they don't care so much about data quality. Is that what they're saying here? Moreover, 25% said leadership is aware of data quality issues, but supports no specific data quality initiative to fix that. So a quarter of the people are aware that the data might be bad, but they really don't have an interest in, you know, improving it. 14% said leadership is oblivious to data quality issues. And 24% said management does whatever they want, regardless of what their data says.
Do whatever they want.
Do whatever they want.
Quarter of them, just whatever.
Whatever. Doesn't matter. The data says. Hey, we need CRM, but, you know, the data, maybe not so important.
Right. Well, and this is, I think, goes back to the idea that, you know, I'm not sure that we are all on the same page about what it is that we're actually even talking about. 25%, so a quarter of leadership aware of data quality issues.
Mm-hmm.
Also a quarter, so they do whatever. Is there some correlation here between like, look, I don't know that I believe what this thing is telling me, so I'm just going to do what I want anyway. I don't know. It seems like there's just a lot.
75% just do whatever they want. And they use the data to tell whatever story they think their boss wants anyway, right?
Which is why their boss does whatever they want, because they're like, look, I know they're lying. They're just making this crap up, you know?
Oh, man. It's not that bad. But I think it kind of speaks, though, to a challenge with CRM and CRM data in particular.
Well, the next call out is that the lack of ownership for CRM directly correlates with, again, this poor quality in the data arena. Those that rated overall quality of CRM data as poor or very poor, so the people that rated the data is not good, 450% more likely than those who rated it as good or very good to say that nobody is responsible for managing the system. 450%. I don't know if the math makes sense here.
Yeah, I don't know that either.
But the point is like people that talk about the quality being bad very much say that, like, you know, people, you know, we're asleep at the wheel here. Like, nobody's in charge.
This kind of speaks to the fact that the management of data sometimes is considered something you outsource, right, to maybe your CRM provider. And you say, why don't you do the data cleanup every so often? We'll count on you for the data management best practices. But if you're running a CRM within a health system, you should really take ownership of your data management, because otherwise your quality is going to go downstream really quickly.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy, right? So it turns out somebody should be in charge of this.
A couple of other quick stats that come out of the study, Reid, that I thought were fascinating too. 79% indicated that COVID-19 is accelerating data decay. They actually allude to that it's due to the great resignation. They say workers are leaving their jobs and transitioning into new roles in droves. And because they do that, their data changes, their numbers, their phone numbers, their titles, et cetera. Plus, the same people that are responsible for data management are leaving too.
Well, there you go. And again, 64%, this kind of dovetails here, of CRM users are reaching their breaking points. Is that why they're just making up numbers? They're just like, watch this. So they would consider leaving their current role and are not and they're, I guess, allocating this, you know, to not really having a plan in place.
It does set a dire tone for what CRMs are like. But really, it honestly, what it all boils back to is, as we've said countless times before, Reid, when you adopt CRM within your organization, it's not just a technology. It's a strategy. It's something you need to support. You need to change your operations. You need to change your organization to support it. You need to spend time ensuring your data is correct. it's something that's living and breathing within your organization that you need to continue to care and feed for. And no wonder 64% of current CRM users are at a breaking point, because it's probably, you know, they're working organizations where you're like, well, you get CRM, you get it all figured out. Let's move on to the next, you know, burning platform, right? Or whatever.
That's right. We bought one of those. So now what?
Yeah, exactly. There are ways. This article that we're going to link to in the show notes kind of refers to what CRM stakeholders should do next. But I think that your conversation with Justin Rodriguez actually has some great insights too.
It does. Yeah, we kind of jumped in. We didn't go too deep in some of this, but talked a little bit about kind of where the headspace was, you know, around this, you know, what kind of what people are thinking, seeing now, but pretty quickly kind of moved to a conversation around, so now what? So what should you do as a marketing and communication leader? What are some, regardless of what vendor you have in place, or do you have, you know, a CRM or not, you know, that kind of thing, some practical things that you could go and do, and even relationships to start building within your organization. So we'll take a brief pause here and then be back to hear from Justin.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back to the Ask the Expert portion of the show. Joined today, Justin Rodriguez. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me, Reid. Really glad to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for those that have listened for a while, maybe thinking, you know, name sounds familiar, but Justin's got a long history in the CRM and kind of MarTech space with Christus and Vanguard and Tenant and a number of folks through the years, but most recently just kind of consulting and lending that expertise across a variety of clients. But excited to have you back on and talk kind of what we're seeing these days relative to CRM.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and I've been doing this for many, many moons. So CRM, yeah, doing it since 2007 across some of the organizations that you just mentioned, and I just love it. CRM is my passion, and it's what drives me every morning.
It's funny. So you mentioned 2007, which is, I don't know, 100 years ago as it relates to technology, certainly. But, and I kid, when I got into this in 2003, yes, we had a website, but it was really just a brochure that was online. Like, it didn't do anything, right? or whatever.
It was just kind of there.
Yeah, it was there. It was fine. It had our address and, you know, some basic information. But and in a small community, it probably did all it needed to do. But in any case, fast forward to today, CRM, it's still a term. It's still something people talk about, both as it relates to a vendor or a solution in a lot of cases, and sometimes more from a programmatic aspect. Just a quick timeline or a quick evolution since 2007. Like, what are kind of some of these major milestones that have kind of got us to today? I mean, there's a bunch of vendors in there, but kind of what does that practically look like?
Yeah. So since 2007, wow, that's just like you said, millions of years ago. We went from just like static flat file databases to now we're talking about AI and cloud computing. And what does this all look like in regards to propensity modeling? What does the patient's, what can we even forecast their health in the future to see, can we be there before they even need something? So that's where we're going with CRM. And, it's funny because in 2006 and 2007, people were saying that CRM was dead back then. I think Computer World had an article that CRM was dead. And look at us now. We're in 2022. CRM is still alive. It's still thriving. Companies like Amazon have built their whole foundation, their whole, architecture and services around CRM. So it's not going away. It may go through some iterations on rebranding, such as like CDP, customer data platform, or even CMR at like Disney or something like that. But the concept of CRM, customer relationship management, the tools will change, the data will change, the vendors will change, but at its core, CRM will never go away.
I equate this to people saying social media all the time, right? And really what they mean is Facebook. We need a social media campaign. We need some social media advertising. And in their head, it's just Facebook, because that's what they know. And I think for a lot of folks listening, certainly, and even myself to some extent, when you say CRM, people are either talking about email or they're talking about a specific vendor. Yeah, how has that changed? You mentioned some of the new terminology, you know, CDP, probably the most common, I guess. Well, how are people thinking about this now?
Well, you know, it's from 2006 and 2007, you know, you looked at CRM as being like an email platform, or even, you know, some of the early CRM, healthcare CRM vendors were really pushing print, you know, mail.
Direct mail.
That was the big tool at that time. But now we are looking at, you know, digital footprints across the spectrum, you know, cookie tracking, serving up ads at, you know, the right time or the right place for individuals, and then connecting all those pieces with the clinical information that we have, and just making a more robust, and, you know, I hate to use this terminology, but really the 360 degree, you know, view of the patient. We are still talking about that. We are still talking about bringing in all these different disparate data systems. We still haven't done it right. There are some pockets across the country of some healthcare providers that have actually done this very well, but for the most part, the whole entire industry is still trying to get there. And we will get there, but it's going to take, you know, guidance from CMS. As you know, last year or the past couple of years, they did the interoperability and patient access final ruling that helped vendors and providers and payers all adopt like a direction towards building APIs so that we could have some type of unified data, you know, across the country. We are getting there. We're slowly getting there. And hopefully, you know, within the next few years, we'll actually see true CRM, you know, take place.
What is a 360 view of a consumer? I mean, everybody talks about this. I mean, is this really, because again, I think when people say that, they very quickly go to persona development.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of it, right? But I mean, that's not really what we're talking about there.
We're in the most intimate industry within the world. We're talking about people's lives, patients' healthcare. And with 360 degree view, we're never really going to get there, to be honest. I mean, that's going to be very difficult. But what we can do is with those touch points that we do have, whether it be their, you know, from rev cycle, call centers, everything that we do have and can control within the healthcare system from a data standpoint, you know, we can build personas around that to, you know, I hate to, again, it's all these cliches and all these buzzwords. It really goes back to trying to implement and adopt all of the different data sets that you have underneath your umbrella, and to build some type of profile of what does this person need next. All of the major companies out there build profiles. And so within healthcare, we need to do the same. We have to, or else we won't be able to provide those services or even get operations around those services so that we can deliver those lab tests, sonograms, you know, get in the right place at the right time for individuals. It's all an orchestration of those different data sets. And hopefully someday we can get there.
I think this is a good opportunity to kind of talk through practically what this means to folks on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, CRM does not equal email. It does not equal a particular vendor, right? And so to your point earlier, we've got some new terms. We've got some new vendors in the space, you know, people that are disrupting this space or disrupting all the other spaces, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't change philosophically the viewpoint or kind of where we go from here. So all that aside, you know, you're in a healthcare system, you're in an organization, you're doing stuff today. What are some of those practical kind of next steps, things that you can do to further the effort?
Yeah. So what healthcare CRM marketers can do is be the flag bearer, be the proponent for driving adoption within your organization. And what I mean by adoption is making those relationships within, you know, cross collaboration with different teams within the organization. Adoption from knowledge, you know, knowledge sharing and training and educating folks within your organization of what this will mean so that everybody is playing from the same playbook or, you know, on the same page. You got to map out journeys. Basically, a hospital has 15,000 different products and services within its roof. And so what does that patient journey look like from all those different standpoints? So you want to break it down to like big chunks of services, cardiology, oncology, neuro. What do these journeys look like so that you can capture all these different, you know, services and products into big chunks? And then you want to create some governance, you know, sit down with folks, let them create some governance in regards to how do we utilize this information? Who has access to this information? What does this information look like within the organization standpoint? And then really lastly, like look at your contracts. Look at the contracts and look at the vendors that you want to work with to see which ones get you closest to what your vision is so that you can create a unified model. You know, I mentioned earlier about, you know, APIs and CMS dive into interoperability. You are going to have to be that proponent. You're going to have to be that steward of what that looks like for a healthcare system so that you can have a single unified model of what the patient looks like so you can build those relationships. I think I've shared with you a long, long time ago that data plus tech plus patients equals friends forever. Well, you're going to have to adopt that more than anybody else within your organization so that at the end of the day, you are the biggest proponent for the patient. You are the one leading the charge to make sure that their experience with your healthcare system is a great one, because within this industry, and as a lot of your listeners know, we are not selling gift cards. We are not selling Uber rides. We're not selling cans of Coke. We're an industry where people don't want to go to. They don't want to go to have, you know, a screening. They don't want to take care of these things. But if we make it as easy as possible through our data touch points, through making sure that our experiences and our journeys are you know, accurate and correct and easy to navigate through, then we can deliver that healthcare that everybody is seeking so that it's easy for patients to pay their bills, schedule appointments, visit with their physicians, and know what to do next within, you know, managing their health.
Yeah, I think that it makes so much sense. Our access to data, like we have more data than we've ever had before. And so now it's like, okay, well, what do you do with this to actually make it meaningful? And then ultimately, how does it best serve the patient? That's kind of what you're talking about, especially if you think about, you know, the consumer journey and even the governance piece of it. I think what's interesting, let's talk about governance for just one second. This is not just marketing and communications. Who else, you know, when you start thinking about the organization as a whole, and this probably helps people kind of think through, well, who are my partners in this? Where do I need to have conversations, things like that? But what are the other logical pieces and parts of the organization, whether that's roles or departments or whatever, you know, that really need to be part of this governance conversation?
You know, individuals from your own EMR or EHR team, you need to have those individuals because that's the lifeblood. You're going to be getting that, you know, patient data from their systems within your CRM. Your finance officers or somebody from finance, you want to have them at the table because you're going to be asking for not only investment within this CRM platform or whatever you want to call it, CMR or CDP platform, but you're going to want to be able to ask for additional funds and, you know, in the future to implement new connections, new services and tools, whether it's cloud computing or AI, and get their blessing on regards to investment and then measuring at the very end. You're going to have to show wins financially to the organization on these investments. So you want these individuals from you know, finance to be able to say, yes, we agree with how you are measuring and what you're returning in investment. Some of the last two that I would think that you want on the table, not only just marketing and strategic teams, but you're a chief medical officer, chief nursing officer, and in order to make sure that the data that you're getting serves its purpose in regards to propensity or, you know, any type of, if you're looking at AI or modeling of patients, what does that mean for the practitioner or provider at the end of the day? And then also risk, your risk and legal teams. You want to bring them to the table in order to identify, you know, do we have any potential risk that will come about from sharing information with new vendors or even how we utilize information and who has access to this information in the future. You want to make sure those individuals are at the table.
So the clinical side, the like the CMO, CNO, you know, kind of whatever that means to your organization, what do those conversations look like? Like what role are they playing in quote unquote CRM?
So a lot of the CRM vendors or, you know, individuals that I've worked with, you know, you want to look at, you know, if this person shows these different triggers and we want to make sure, or what I mean triggers, I hate to use that word. If they show particular diagnoses or have had certain procedures, and you know this information because you're getting it from your EMR system and loading it into your CRM system, what does that communication look like in the future? And if we can, if we do build a trigger to say that if this person shows these signs, you know, high cholesterol, you know, high resting BPM, how do we communicate with that individual? And what does that look like from a standpoint of a practitioner sharing them with them what they need to do next in regards to their screenings, next appointments? You know, you want to get everybody on the same page in regards to this patient data and patient communications in the future. And you want to get their blessing on it, because at the end of the day, the chief nursing officer or the chief medical officer will help guide you on being a proponent for care with that data, you know, care for that data and also care for the patient in the end.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I mean, it's like this is another example of how we're probably a little closer to the care that our organizations are providing than we probably think we are. You know, working with the clinical staff on the, you know, if this then that type equations, I think is really interesting. And I think too, maybe even helps sell the idea of all of this, right? You're involving people outside of marketing. You're getting them to be proponents of, in this case, CRM, but whatever the initiative is that you're focused on, it doesn't even have to be CRM, you know, but it's getting those other people involved and understanding, you know, and helping them understand and getting them to be advocates for, you know, what it is that you're doing, I think is really interesting and quite honestly important and needed.
You know, it legitimizes what you're doing with that patient data, and it actively gets members of the, you know, those who are providing care to your patients involved so that you are all on the same page in regards to communication and also what happens next.
Well, this is great. I mean, we could keep talking and even as it relates to acronyms, start diving into, you know, really is, you know, CDP any different than CRM?
Yeah,
but anyway, no, we'll save that for another day. But
absolutely.
We'll be sure anybody that wants to connect with Justin, we'll be sure to, you know, link your LinkedIn profile, things like that in the show notes. But certainly appreciate you coming on, spending a few minutes, and look forward to having you back soon.
Thanks a lot, Reid.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Special thanks to Justin Rodriguez for coming on the show yet again. Appreciate his thoughts and insights around all things CRM.
Yeah, Justin is such a smart guy. Whenever it comes to CRM, I always love talking to him. I'm glad you had a chance to sit down with him, Reid.
Yeah.
It was a great conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, a couple of things before we let you go today. The TPS report, mentioned it earlier in the show, over at touchpoint.health. You can sign up. In addition to those five articles and that little nifty newsletter to start your week, within that newsletter, also some quick links to upcoming industry conferences. I'd recommend you check those out, have you mark the dates or even register if you're ready to do so. So again, touchpoint.health, TPS report up in the top navigation. Sign up for that. Rate, review, subscribe, all that kind of fun stuff helps others find the show. And we would appreciate the support. We'd love to hear from you as well. So, all right. Recommendations. What do you have today?
Reid, I'm sure you're in your household, just like in our household, we use a lot of the plastic bags, like sandwich bags and snack size bags and things
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we always, it seems to be something you always turn to. Well, over the last year, my wife and I decided we're going to switch away from the disposable plastic bags and get reusable food storage bags. We found some that were on Amazon. And it's funny, and this is a side rant, anytime you order something from Amazon, I'm noticing many more manufacturer names that are just a weird combination of vowels and letters, you know, kind of mixed together. But this is a company called Rounoo, R-O-O-N-O-O. So there's another, is that a real name? I don't know. But anyway, a 10-pack of dishwasher-safe reusable food storage bags. And they go, they're multiple different sizes, sandwich bag size, which I find to be the most useful. I use them all the time. But also snack size bags and freezer gallon size bags. And they're made with silicone. They're leak-proof. They're extra thick. They have a nice kind of like seal across the top. They're food-grade PEVA material, P-E-V-A material that's certified that it's, you know, not going to leak. It's BPA-free, chloride-free, lead-free, all of those things. Really handy to use. You could take these plastic bags. You could throw your extra food storage in them, throw them in the fridge. Then when you use them, you can wash them out. These happen to be dishwasher safe too. So you could just throw them in the dishwasher. All the better, right? And then you have these reusable bags. So I know that this is something that probably many households have, reusable storage bags. But in this particular case, it's something that we found to be very useful. And it reduces our overall carbon footprint by not throwing away all the plastic bags. So that's my recommendation.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I like that. That's good. Check that out. We've got some containers and things like that that we use for the kids' school stuff. But that may be a good option. So I have to check it out. I'm going to recommend a podcast. If you're looking for something drive time related, that's just entertainment. You don't have to listen to it like super close, but it's just entertaining. Smartless. Have you listened to Smartless? Have you subscribed?
I have been in the state of Smartless before, but I have not listened to the podcast.
So Smartless is hosted by three individuals: Jason Bateman, Sean Hayes, and Will Arnett. Might be the funniest thing I've ever heard. So it's a pod, and it says from the website, it's a podcast that connects and unites people from all walks of life to learn about shared experiences through thoughtful dialogue and organic hilarity. I like that. A nice surprise. In each episode of Smartless, one of the three hosts reveals a mystery guest to the other two, and what ensues is a genuinely improvised and authentic conversation filled with laughter, newfound knowledge, and to feed the Smartless mind. So again, if you haven't listened to this, it's absolutely hysterical. Jason Bateman cracks me up. He's just hilarious. I like him a lot from his Arrested Development days. If you wanted to pick one to start with, I'd say it's probably three or four episodes ago, maybe. David Spade was the guest. Might be the funniest thing, like literally laughing out loud in my car by myself, like so freaking funny. But anyway, they've had folks like Michael Lewis and John Hamm, Tom York and Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead, Courtney Cox, Eddie Vedder, Johnny Knoxville, J.J. Abrams, Will Forte, Jimmy Fallon, Halle Berry, Dave Grohl, Tom Hanks, Seinfeld. You know, the list goes on and on. It's been on for a few seasons now. Like they're, I don't know, maybe not quite 100 episodes, but getting close. Anyway, there's a lot to choose from, and it is it really is super, super funny. So Smartless.
You know, I'm immersed in the last season of Ozark right now. And thinking about Jason Bateman as being a humorous character, which he is in this show, he really isn't. But I love that show, Smartless. I think I've listened to it before. Every once in a while, I'm going to have to pick it up and just try to give it more of a regular listen now.
Yeah, be sure to start with the David Spade episode. It is hilarious. So, well, there you go. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks for joining us for yet another episode of Touchpoint. We certainly appreciate the support. We'd love to hear from you. Like we mentioned earlier, find Chris or myself on LinkedIn or Twitter. Touchpoint.health is the website. Rate, review, subscribe. For Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.